Talk Shoe.
Recorded live.
All right, good day, ladies and gentlemen. Pastor Eli James, here's another installment of the Voice of Christian Israel. And I have to apologize for the long delay, unusual problems. My office computer simply refused to recognize my old keyboard. Something went wrong with it, and I tried several times to put in a new keyboard, and then that didn't work, and so I tried a laptop, and that didn't work either. And so I tried one more time after Gary called me up and said, people are waiting. So I tried one more time to boot up, and it worked, so here we are. So today's theme is why Jesus is not a Jew. And I basically want to preface all comments on this subject. And a lot of people believe that Jesus was a Jew. And so much depends on the definition of the word Jew. And, of course, everybody in the world today is utilizing hello? Is that...
Oh, it's just your coffin.
Okay. Yeah, I may have to mute you. There's a lot of background noise. I think it's from your phone, Gary. So I'll mute you and then I'll bring you back in, okay?
Okay.
All right. Okay, for some reason, getting a talk back echo from Gary's phone. So,
that's terrible.
Yes. And so what we've got here is the word Jew is given to us by the Jewish people. And they're the ones who define its meaning, okay? Now, part of the definition that they provide for us, and, of course, for the rest of the world, is that the word Jew derives from the word Judah. But that is not true. In the Old Testament, the word Jew appears, maybe a dozen times. And every time that word appears in the Old Testament, I'm talking about the King James Version, it's always translated from the word Judah. Now, the Judahites were a specific tribe out of the 12 tribes of Israel. And the only way you can be considered a Judahite is if your father is a Judahite and your mother is some sort of Israelite, or she can even be any woman of the white race. But the father must be a Judahite in order for the offspring to be counted as Judahites, okay? Now, the Jews have a totally different reckoning. Their reckoning goes by the mother, and which is proved by the state of Israeli, which has a law, which if you're Jewish, you must have a Jewish mother, okay? So why does the Old Testament have a patriarchal reckoning, and Jews have a matriarchal reckoning? Where does this matriarchal reckoning come from? Well, it comes from the Canaanites, folks, because the Canaanites have always had a matriarchal tradition, and which proves that the Jews aren't Judahites at all, but they're Canaanites and Edomites masquerading as Judah and Israel, okay? So getting back to the Old Testament, every time the word Jew appears in the Old Testament, it is translated from the word Judah. There is no reason to change any of these words into Jew. It should always be translated as Judah. And the reason why the Jews have inserted the word Jew in there, those dozen or more times, is to create a false equation between Judah and Jew. But as I just explained to you, there's one major difference between Jews and Judahites, namely their patriarchal / matriarchal heritage. Those are completely different. Also, the Jewish religion is not based on the Old Testament either. So the traditions of the Jewish people are markedly different from the traditions of those people in the Old Testament called Judah. And they're not the same race by any means. So let me go into 2 Kings 16:6, because I want to show you this is the very first instance of where the word Jew appears. And I'm just going to start reading from verse 1. In the 17th year of Pekah, the son of Remaliah, Ahaz, the son of Jotham, king of Judah, began to reign. Okay, so we're talking here in verse 1 about Pekah, the king of Judah. All right, and that's the proper translation of the Hebrew word Yehudi. It should not be translated as Jew because the Judahites were a specific tribe. The Jews today can be of any race, nationality, ethnicity whatsoever. So there's no comparison between the two words. The word Jew has a much wider series of definitions than the word Judah, which has only one definition, namely a descendant of the house or tribe of Judah. Okay, verse 2. 20 years old was Ahaz when he began to reign, and reigned 16 years in Jerusalem, and did not that which was right in the sight of Yahweh his Elohim, like David his father. But he walked in the way of the kings of Israel. Okay, so now we have the kings of Judah and the kings of Israel. Okay, because the nation of Israel was divided into two houses, the house of Judah, which consisted of the tribe of Judah and the tribe of Benjamin, and then the house of Israel, which consisted of the other 10 tribes. Now, none of your Jews or Judeo-Christians ever bother to talk about this fact, that the 12 tribes were divided up into two houses. Okay, continuing here. Yea, and made his son to pass through the fire. He sacrificed one of his firstborn to the fires of Moloch, according to the traditions of the Canaanites. Okay, they did wrong. They committed evil. According to the abominations of the heathen, whom Yahweh cast out from before the children of Israel. Okay, so the Israelites of the northern 10 tribes were practicing these Canaanite rituals. Verse 4. And he sacrificed and burnt incense in the high places and on the hills and under every green tree. Then Rezin, king of Syria, and Pekah, son of Remaliah, king of Israel, came up to Jerusalem to war. Okay, so we have war between the house of Israel and the house of Judah. There's war going on between the 10 northern tribes and the southern two tribes. Verse 6. At that time, Rezin of Syria recovered Elath of Syria and drave the Jews. Here's the first instance of the word Jew in the Old Testament. It should simply say, and drove Judah from Elath, and the Syrians came to Elath and dwelt there unto this day. So when the translators insert the word Jew into the translation here, substituting the word Jew for the word of Judah, they do it for the only one purpose, and that is to create a false equation in our minds between the Jewish people, who are not descendants of, they're not Shemites, they're not Israelites, they're not Adamites, but they are in fact Canaanites and Edomites. The whole purpose is to insert this word Jew, which has a much greater variety of meanings than the word Judah, in order to create a false impression in the minds of the readers that the two groups can be equated, and they cannot be equated. Bill, you're still with me here?
Yes, I'm still with you.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm paying as close attention as I should be, but I'm still with you.
Right. And so, what we have here is this word Jew has been substituted for the word Judah, and the word Jew has a much wider variety of meanings than the word Judah, okay? And in the it stands to reason that we should use a word that the people apply to themselves. Okay, so for example, the German people are called in English Germans, all right, and in the Latin languages they're referred to as the Alemann, but the Germans refer to themselves as Deutsch, okay, and their country they refer to as Deutschland. So the true word for the German people is Deutsch, okay. And the same thing is true like here in America. The Indians, none of the American Indians refer to themselves as Indians. They refer to themselves by their tribal names. You know, the Choctaw call themselves the Choctaw. The Apaches call themselves Apaches. The Sioux call themselves Sioux. And none of them refer to themselves as Indians. So this Jew, the word Jew, has been inserted from the outside into the Bible by the Jews themselves, in order to make this false equation between themselves and the tribe or house of Judah. Wouldn't that be a correct way of characterizing it, Bill?
It's very good.
Yeah. Okay.
It must be made.
Yeah, yeah. And so when, in my opinion then, the word Jew simply should not appear in the Old Testament at all.
Certainly not. It shouldn't even appear in the New Testament.
Well, you
want to apply it where it applies to the Canaanites,
yes,
the disbelieving people, who the Jews of today are descended from.
Exactly.
Yes, we want to apply that, but we would have to recognize that is more or less an anachronism.
Right. It is an anachronism, And but it was an anachronism that was actually created very recently.
Okay.
Because the word Jew, and then the original King James, it was actually, because there was no letter J, it was actually spelled I-E-W-E, U-E, okay? And there it was a contraction of what should be Judah, okay, and which in the Old Testament was actually in the Hebrew is Yehudi. And Yehudi only has one definition, and that is Judah himself, okay, or his descendants through the patriarchal line, okay? So when you have that very specific definition given to us in the Hebrew, then the modern definitions of the word Jew simply do not apply to the Hebrew, okay? So we have to keep that in mind. Now, going to the New Testament, and the Greek word for that's commonly translated as Jew is Judaeos, and Judaeos does not mean a racial Judahite. What it means is a citizen of the country of Judea, okay? Now, you're the Greek expert, Bill. Do you want to verify what I'm saying here?
Well, that's correct. Judahia is the Roman district of Judea,
mm-hmm.
which wasn't even really a district, a geographic entity until the time of the Maccabees, when they went out in about 135 BC and began to conquer the city surrounding Jerusalem.
Right, right. So, but the definition of Judean, which is what the actual translation of the word Judaeus should be.
Absolutely. Judaeus, everywhere there is Jew written in the New Testament should be either Judahia, Judea,
uh-huh.
Judaeus, Judean, or something similar.
Right. And so the Jews have performed the same trick here in the New Testament that they performed in the Old Testament by substituting the word Jew for Judean. Okay? And once you understand that there are two primary different types of Judeans living during the time of Christ in New Testament times, what you have is the original Judeans who were who? The Judahites, okay? And then you have the interlopers, the false Judahites who claim to be Judah but are not and do lie, Revelation 2:9 and 3:9. Those interlopers, those deceivers, have been pretending to be Judah ever since. And so since they identify themselves as Jews, they have been trying to rewrite history by pretending to be the Judahites of the Old Testament and the Judeans of the New Testament, okay? So, but the fact is that the Jews, the people we know today as Jews, are not descended from the house of Judah at all. They are descended from the interlopers who John Hyrcanus, on threat of pain of death, forcibly made them citizens of Judah, of the land of Judah, and now it's properly called Judea, which is a country having more than one ethnicity residing in it, okay? So the Jews are that ethnicity which was incorporated by John Hyrcanus. They are not Judah by any means. They are, in fact, outsiders. They're strangers, aliens, who have assumed the citizenship of Judea, which does not make them the Judah of the Old Testament. Wouldn't that be a correct way of differentiating between the Jews and the Judahites of the New Testament?
Absolutely. They were forcibly converted, and many of them, by the description in Josephus, were very happy to be converted.
Yes.
Because they had been left outside for so many centuries, they were forcibly converted to Judaism.
Right,
The perverted form of Mosaism that they were practicing
right.
at the time.
Yeah, and isn't it true? We've been addressing the racial question, is Jesus a Jew by race or ethnicity? And the answer to that is no, he's a Judahite. But he's not a Jew because the Jews incorporate all races and ethnicities on the planet today. And a Jew can be a Chinaman, a black, we have the so-called black Hebrews, can be a Sephardic Jew, an Ashkenazi Jew. And virtually none of these people have any heritage relating back to the old tribe of Judah. Even though the Jews who have invaded Palestine base the invasion on having Shemitic descent, returning quote unquote to their old homeland, okay? But it's not their old homeland. The first time the Jews came into the nation of Judea was by usurpation, by pretending to be Judahites when they're not. And they're making the same pretense today that that their ancient homeland, it's actually our homeland, those of us in true Israel who have Judahite ancestors, and which is primarily the Germanic people, the Jutland Peninsula, et cetera, et cetera. These people were descended from the tribe of Judah. And so it's actually our people who have a right to go back to Palestine and claim it. The Jews have no right whatsoever. And this lack of right is compounded by the fact that the vast majority of the Jewish people today are in fact Khazars, Ashkenazi Khazars, none of whose ancestors ever set foot in Palestine, okay? And so only 5% of modern Jews are actually descendants of the Sephardim, who did actually spend some time in Palestine, but not as Judahites, but as Edomites who had become citizens under John Hyrcanus, okay? And so wouldn't that be the correct analysis of what the modern Jews today are?
Absolutely. And you know, it's a marvel of the wonders and the power of the Jewish propaganda machine that the average person in the street generally considers the Jew to be the purest of all races. It's absolutely incredible because the exact opposite is true.
Right. Yes. Yeah, well, and even if you go online and you just look at the DNA studies of the Jewish people, you find that they're all mixed up. And this is the main reason for why they have all these genetic diseases, is because the DNA programming is off kilter. Because
basically we could just take the DNA of the entire planet and put it in a blender, and what we'd end up with is a Jew.
Right, there you go, yeah. And that's why they have so many genetic diseases, and why they have physical deformities to a greater extent than other people do. I don't want to use the word race, because they're not a race, they're a breed. Jesus refers to them as a brood, a brood of vipers who can do no good. And so what we're talking about is a group of people who are engaged in a charade, a gigantic charade, pretending to be somebody they're not. And once we understand that this charade is going on, this great impersonation of Judah and Israel by an alien people, then you begin to understand the difference, why Jesus hated those scribes and Pharisees so much, okay? And, you know, so let's talk a little bit about the Jewish religion compared to the religion of Moses. You know, there's actually no similarities between the two religions at all. So the second question was Jesus a Jew by religion? Let's turn to Matthew chapter 15, verse 1. Then came to Jesus scribes and Pharisees, which were of Jerusalem. Okay, now this is about another confrontation between Jesus and the scribes and Pharisees, saying, why do thy disciples transgress the tradition of the elders? Okay, they're asking Jesus, why are the apostles and the people following Jesus around, why aren't they following the traditions of the elders? They're not asking, why aren't they following the law of Moses? They're asking, why do they transgress the traditions of the elders? For they wash not their hands when they eat bread. But he answered and said unto them, why do ye also transgress the commandment of God by your tradition? Okay, so he's directly contradicting what they have to say. He's telling them that they're transgressing the commandments of God by their tradition. Verse 4, for God commanded, saying, honor thy father and mother, and he that curses father and mother, let him die the death. Now, it's interesting that since the Jewish people can be of any race whatsoever, it doesn't matter who the father is, okay? So they don't have to honor their father, and even their honoring of their mother is simply tokenism, because the mother can be any race as well. Verse 5, but ye say, whosoever shall say to his father or his mother, it is a gift, by whatsoever thou mightest be profited by me. And of course, we Israelites are told to hearken back to our father and mother, Abraham and Sarah, who were pure white. And of course, the Jews never talk about Abraham and Sarah. They will claim Abraham as their father, but only because Abraham was also the grandfather of Esau, who was the original race traitor. Okay, verse 6. And honor not his father or his mother when he shall be free. Thus have ye made a commandment of God, the commandment of God, by none effect, of none effect, by your tradition. So what he's telling these scribes and Pharisees is that they have made the law of God of none effect because they have substituted their own traditions in place of the law of Moses, okay? And so the common understanding that Judaism is based on the law of Moses is directly contradicted here by Jesus Christ himself. So we have two possibilities that Jesus was a Jew, number one by race and number two by religion. And we can show, we can prove conclusively that Jesus is not a Jew in either sense, okay? If we constantly accept Jewish definitions of words and accept their version of history and their claim to be us, their claim to be Israel and Judah, then we're going to be totally confused. So like getting back into the New Testament, when we're talking about the Judeans, this understanding helps explain the difference between the bad Jews and the good Judeans, okay? Or let's put it this way, the bad Judeans versus the good Judeans. And most Bible commentators are utterly perplexed as to why Jesus hated the Jews so much when everybody says that Jesus was a Jew. Well, he was not a Jew in the sense of the modern Jews today. He was not a racial Jew. He was a pure Judahite, okay? And he did not practice the religion of the Jews either. So he's not a Jew in either one of those senses. But the Yes.
It's the same. An analogy today would be any politician in Chicago addressing an audience of Americans.
Right.
200 years ago, or whenever Chicago was founded, it wasn't quite 200 years.
1830, I believe. Yeah.
That would have meant a group of white people
That's
in 1830.
Right. That's right.
That would have been nobody else there but white people.
Exactly.
And today, it's just the opposite. You'd be lucky to find a white person in the audience.
Right.
However, it would still be an audience of Americans.
That's right. That's
Same
right.
thing all over again. It's
yeah.
no different.
Yeah, and here the word American is a word that denotes citizenship, not race. Although, as you're correctly pointing out, when the founding fathers created this country, they were all white men. And exclusively
Absolutely.
So.
And today it could be anybody.
That's right. And
I'd like to raise, in
yeah.
order to illustrate the legalism of the Pharisees, I'd like to just take a minute to discuss a particular, I'm going to call it a little-known mistranslation because I might be the only person that I think translates it correctly.
Okay.
And it's in Mark 7:3.
All right.
And Mark 7:3 in the King James says, "For the Pharisees and all the Jews, except they wash their hands oft,"
mm-hmm.
meaning often,
right.
"eat not, holding the tradition of the elders." And I translate that word oft as pugme. It's the word that we get. It's the Greek word for fist, and we get the word pugilistic and things, words like that from
it. Oh, okay. Okay.
And pugme is a Greek unit of measure, which also means from the elbow to the fist.
Oh, okay.
And I translate Mark 7:3 in this manner, and I can contend in support of this translation. "For the Pharisees and all the Judeans, if they do not wash the hands to the elbow, they do not eat,"
uh-huh.
"holding to the tradition of the elders."
Right,
And that shows, and this isn't the only place. I mean, I have many other places to show that. It shows the ritualism that's seeped into every facet of Judaism,
mm-hmm.
that salvation and doing good before God was all seen as following certain rituals in your daily life every day,
right?
And doing things a certain particular way. And if you've ever spent time with Muslims, you'll see that they basically practice the same things.
Yes,
wash a certain way five times a day, pray a certain way five times a day.
Yeah.
And the people of Judea had fallen into the same trap.
Right.
Long
right.
before the Muslims had, and it's an ultra extreme form of legalism and, mm-hmm. and ritualism.
Right, right. And of course the scribes and Pharisees were trying to impose their form of ritualism upon the people of Judea.
Absolutely. They
yes.
policed that.
Exactly.
And it's evident in the New Testament. They policed that. And they expected everybody that was a Judean or in Judaism to do those things in that manner.
Right, right. And so what we have, and another aspect of the this intertestamental period that most mainstream scholars totally overlook, is the fact that Herod was not a Judahite. He was an Edomite from the nation of Idumea.
Yes, and that's in Josephus's history four times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Between Antiquities and Wars, there's four testimonies from Josephus that Herod was an Edomite.
Yes. And so it's not true that Herod was of the line of the Maccabees or of the Judahites. He was, in fact, a usurper from the nation of Canaan land, that particular nation called Idumea. Okay? And so he was the one, when he came to power, he murdered John Hyrcanus. He slew the entire Sanhedrin, ridding the Sanhedrin of his perceived enemies and replacing those people with his friends. Okay? So in other words, there was a coup.
Absolutely a coup. And Josephus doesn't really frame it in that manner. Josephus says that he slew all of the friends of Hyrcanus and all of the nobles of Jerusalem,
yes.
who he thought might have a claim to the throne,
right.
or be able to oppose him.
Yes, exactly, exactly. And that's what any petty dictator does when he takes over. He gets rid of the opposition leadership.
Yes.
That's what Herod did. So
the Roman Caesars did.
Yes, exactly, exactly. And in fact, the Caesars put Herod on the throne of Judah, of Judea.
For 900 talents of silver.
Yes.
And a talent at that time is something like 60 pounds. It's no minuscule amount.
Yeah, right. It takes a few asses and oxen to carry that kind of gold around, right?
Right.
Yeah.
It was a considerable amount of silver.
Yeah. So, and Herod's father, Antipater, paid bribes to Julius Caesar and to Mark Antony in order to seat his two sons, Herod, and I forget the Phasaelus, I forget the name of his other son, to put them in positions of rulership in the land of Judea. Okay? So the way the Jews took over in Palestine in those days was by bribery, murder, and usurpation. These are the people that are the Jews, okay, that we refer to as the Jews today. And it's the descendants of the scribes and Pharisees and of Herod, the Herodians, etc., who are the Jews today, okay? Those people still exist. They're the Edomites of the Bible, okay? And so once you understand that there was a coup, a usurpation, and now they're in Judaism, Judaism is based on replacing the law of Moses with the traditions of these elders, these scribes and Pharisees, and it's also based on the pretense that the Jewish people are of the tribe or house of Israel. It's all lies. 2,000-year-old lies. That's what it's all based on. And so we cannot accept Jewish definitions of words because those words are designed to deceive. And we have to go back into the original language of the Hebrew scriptures and the Greek scriptures and utilize language as those people utilized language in order to comprehend these translations, okay? So I repeat, the Old Testament should not contain the word Jew at all. And in the New Testament, the proper translation is Judean, okay? Now, I would also say that it is proper to use the word Jew with respect to the evil Judeans, because Jesus Christ clearly identifies them as such, okay? And these are the people who are associated with the scribes and Pharisees, with Herod, and with these usurpers from Idumea. So when we know that Jesus is referring to these people, then it's right and proper to refer to them as Jews. But when Jesus is speaking to the Judeans of his own people, of his own race, and of the house of Judah, then that word Judean can be properly translated as either Judah or Israel, because that's who they are. Wouldn't that be a fair characterization, how to differentiate between the good Judeans and the evil Judeans?
Well, that is very agreeable, and especially in religious and philosophic ways, it's agreeable. However, in my own translations, I refrained from doing that because
right.
I didn't want to start adding to the Bible or have people think that I was making up the distinction
right.
or making a judgment myself.
Yes.
And no. It's better when you're translating the New Testament to just simply translate the word Judean.
That's right.
And it's a national, it's of national significance. It's not an ethnic significance.
Right. And it's just as you were describing the difference between the original Americans and modern Americans. The original Americans were white men, okay, and the same thing is true of the Judahites. They were Israelite Judahite men, okay, and they were not Jews. But today, Americans can be of any race because it's a question of citizenship, not race anymore, okay? And so America has gone through the same transition. And so what the Jews do is they use the word Jew to refer to the groups of people that they never belonged to in order to pretend to be them, okay? And we have a pretender on the throne today who claims to be an American. He's not even American in the sense of having gained citizenship. He's certainly not an American in the sense that the founding fathers were, okay? Yet he claims to be an American.
Well, if he's an American, I sure as hell can't be.
Yeah. And so the Jews are doing exactly the same thing that Obama's doing. They're pretending to be something they're not. And they have had access to these scriptures, have had influence in the seminaries and with the theologians, telling them, well, this is what you should believe about us and our ancestors, okay? But when we check the historical facts, we find out that none of this is true. The true Israelites and the true Judahites are the Anglo-Saxon, Celtic, and Caucasian people, and the Jews are impersonating us. And that's why I entitled my book, The Great Impersonation, How the Antichrist Has Deceived the Whole World. And you have to read the Bible with this distinction in mind. So when you come across the word Jew, whether it's in the Old Testament or the New Testament, you always have to look at the context and determine, is this talking about one of the tribes of Israel? Or is it talking about these usurpers who pretend to be Israel, okay? And with that distinction in mind, you can read virtually any verse and make up your own mind which group is being talked about. And it's really not hard. For example, let me turn to John chapter 7, verse 1. After these things, Jesus walked in Galilee, for he would not walk in Jewry, because the Jews sought to kill him. All right, so let's translate this properly and substitute the word Judean, okay? After these things, Jesus walked in Galilee, for he would not walk among the Judeans, because the Judeans sought to kill him. Now that we understand that there are two main types of Judeans, namely the Judahites, and the Edomites, who had just recently gained citizenship as Judeans, which group of Judeans do you think Jesus is avoiding here, Bill? Which ones?
He tells us which ones when he tells them that they're not his sheep because they don't hear his voice.
Right, right. So as long as you don't understand that there's two types of Judeans and that this word Jew disguises that fact, you can hardly understand the New Testament because, the commentators on the New Testament, especially the book of John, They're constantly scratching their heads. You know, why would Jesus, being a Jew, quote unquote, hate the Jews so much? And always, he never has anything nice to say about the Jews. Okay, and if he does have anything good to say about them, it's not, he's not talking about the Idumeans. He's talking about his own people of the house of Judah. Okay. Now let me just continue here. Verse 2. Now the Jews' Feast of Tabernacle was at hand. He's making a distinction here between the Jewish Feast of Tabernacles, in my thinking anyway, and the Judahite Feast of Tabernacles. Okay. So here again, the Jews had instituted their own feast days in contradistinction to the feast days of the house of Israel. Again, with the Edomite Jews trying to impose their doctrine upon the land and nation of Judea. And if you don't understand that that's what these Edomite Judeans were doing, then you don't understand the history of this time. So we have a group of interlopers pretending to be Judah who call themselves Jews. And then they falsely use the word Jew and apply that to their predecessors, the Judahites. That's what's going on, and that's why we cannot apply the word Jew to their predecessors who were Judahites. What we're doing then is we're falsely identifying, for example, as in the case of America, we're falsely identifying Obamaites as the founding fathers. There's a big difference between those two. And if you don't keep that difference in mind, you will think like a Jew and act like a Jew. And that's what they want you to do. They want you to think like them. They don't want you to understand that there's a racial difference between the Judahites and the Edomite Jews of that time. Okay? And as long as you ignore the question of race and descent and lineal descent, and the question of the main differences between the law of Moses and the teachings of the scribes and Pharisees, which are properly called the Talmud, which again is a distortion of the teachings of Moses, not a continuation of the traditions of Moses by any means. We have absolute proof that the Jewish people are not Judahites, nor is their religion the religion of Moses. And as long as you believe those two gigantic lies, you will never understand who the two groups of people are that are contending against each other in the New Testament times, okay?
And Paul explains that in Romans chapter 9.
Okay. Are you there?
Romans chapter 9 is all about those two groups that are contending against each other.
Okay. I was going to go to Acts, I believe, Acts chapter 1. But if you want to, if you're at Romans chapter 9, if you want to talk about that.
Well, I'm not on it, but it's clear that Paul expresses a concern. I'll go to it. Paul expresses a concern only for his brethren according to the flesh.
The flesh, right.
Who are in Palestine.
Yes.
Microsoft words give me a hard time.
And every other every epistle that Paul writes, he addresses to Israelites of the flesh residing in various territories, residing in various cities, etc.
Absolutely. Yes. He's only concerned for his brethren according to the flesh, his mm-hmm. kinsmen who are of his flesh.
Right.
I speak the truth among the anointed. I lie not. My conscience bearing witness with me in the Holy Spirit. I'm reading my own translation.
Yes. Okay.
The grief for me is great, and the distress incessant in my heart, for I have prayed that I myself would be accursed from the anointed, meaning the group,
right,
for the brethren, my kinsmen in regards to the flesh,
yes,
those who are Israelites, whose is the position of sons, and the honor and the covenants and the legislation and the service and the promises, whose are the fathers, and of whom are the anointed mm-hmm. in regards to the flesh.
Right, right.
Being overall blessed of Yahweh for the ages.
Yes.
Truly. Not, however, that the word of Yahweh has failed, since not all those who are from Israel are those of Israel.
Mm-hmm.
Nor, because they are offspring of Abraham, are they all children. but in Isaac your offspring shall be called.
Yes.
That is to say, the children of the flesh, meaning Abraham's other descendants, including the Edomites, these are not the children of Yahweh, but the children of the promise are counted as the offspring.
Yes.
Meaning only the descendants of Jacob.
Right.
And I just read up to Romans 9:8, and to skip ahead, well, I'm not going to skip ahead.
Yeah.
9:9 says, indeed, this word of promise, at the appointed time will I come, and there shall be a son for Sarah. And not only, but Rebekah also had conceived from one, meaning one promise, by Isaac our father. Then, and this is the crux of the matter right here, Romans 9:11. Then, not yet having been born, nor having performed any good or evil, that the purpose of Yahweh concerning the chosen endures not from rituals, but from the calling.
Mm-hmm.
To her it was said, the elder will serve the younger, just as it is written, Jacob I love, and Esau I hated.
Right.
Paul is concerned for his brethren in the of the flesh, his fleshly brethren, the true Israelites, and he's contrasting the true Israelites with the descendants of Esau.
That's right.
And he goes on, in verse 20, and I'm going to commence for a couple of verses.
Okay.
But rather, O man, who are you to be arguing against Yahweh? Will the figure say to its fabricator, why did you make me in this manner? Or does the potter not have authority over the clay to make from out of the same lump, meaning Isaac and Rebekah, one vessel for honor, meaning Jacob Israel, and one for dishonor, meaning Esau Edom? Moreover, if Yahweh wishes to display wrath and to make known his power, with much patience having borne vessels of wrath furnished for destruction, that's the Edomites, the vessels of wrath furnished for destruction.
Mm-hmm.
And so that, and to see that, read Obadiah and Malachi.
Right.
And the prophets. And to make known his power with much patience having bore vessels of wrath furnished for destruction, and so that he will make known the wealth of his honor upon vessels of mercy.
Right, right.
He previously prepared for honor. They're the Israelites.
Mm-hmm.
This whole chapter is contrasting the Edomites in Judea and the Israelites in Judea.
Right.
Period.
Yes.
And that's the story of the division in Judea. There was division amongst the Judeans.
Exactly.
This is why.
As there is division in America between the original white citizens and now the multiracial hodgepodge that we have. And the same thing is happening in America today that happened in Judea then, that namely the multiracial hodgepodge was taking over the government of the country and using the government to oppress the original citizens.
Absolutely.
Which
going on here now, and it's going on in Britain and Canada.
Exactly.
It's going on all over Christendom, and it's part of our punishment.
That's right.
And it's part of it. I take it back. Everybody likes to cite the New Covenant promise in Jeremiah at 31:31, but read the verses just before that.
Okay.
In my viewpoint, the New Covenant, it's here, and all of us, all the descendants of Jacob are grasping it in one form or another. But it hasn't been consummated.
Yes.
The New Covenant is not consummated until the Second Coming.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
And I'd like to read from, I'm in a wrong chapter.
Okay.
All right, from Jeremiah 31:28.
Okay.
27.
Okay.
Jeremiah 31:27. Behold, the days come, saith Yahweh, that I will sow the house of Israel and the house of Judah with the seed of man and with the seed of beast.
Mm-hmm.
That is exactly what's going on in Christendom,
right,
in the real house of Israel and the real house of Judah right now.
Exactly.
Every Christian nation is being sown with the seed of beasts.
Yes.
And it shall come to pass, like I have watched over them to pluck up and to break down and to throw down and to destroy and to afflict, so I will watch over them to build and to plant. Now, this is a guarantee that even though we're being sown with the seed of beast, we're not going to be destroyed. We're going to prevail, and we're going to come out of this. And the answer to that is in Ezekiel chapter 38 and 39.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
In well, those days they shall say no more, the fathers have eaten a sour grape, and the children's teeth are set on edge.
Yes.
But everyone shall die for his own iniquity.
Uh-huh.
Every man that eats the sour grape, his teeth shall be set on edge. And then it goes into Jeremiah 31:31, and it talks about the new covenant. And I believe it's talking about this very time, because the new covenant, we pray, is about to be consummated.
Yes.
But before that happens, we're being sown with the seed of man and the seed of beast, and this is a test from Yahweh.
Yes.
And if you want to know what the sour grapes are, it's back in Deuteronomy, I hope I remembered this right, 32:32. For their vine is the vine of Sodom, and the fields of Gomorrah, their grapes of gall, their clusters are bitter.
Right.
What were Sodom and Gomorrah doing? They were Canaanites, they were race mixing, they were homosexuality,
yeah,
and everybody that eats the sour grapes are the people that accept that.
That's right. That's right. And America has accepted the whole wad.
So basically, Jeremiah is telling us that this is it. We're being sown with the seed of man and the seed of beast.
Mm-hmm.
That's the race mixing going on in all of our nations today. And the people that accept it are all going to die.
That's right. That's right. We're not all saved for believing in Jesus, because the people who believe in that Jesus believe in the wrong Jesus. Okay? And going back into the book of Romans, where you quoted the sons, the placement of sons, the King James falsely translates that as adoption.
Right. And I could discuss that, and I have a citation. I don't have it with me right now, but I have it in my head. In Strabo, and to prove the veracity of what I'm about to say, I can cite Strabo.
Okay.
I just don't have the quote in front of me in the chapter and the book. However, Strabo uses that word huiothesia. Huiothesia is huios and thesis. Thesis, it means a placement. And huios is a son. Son, the word means the placement of a son.
Right.
Into position. I mean, we could all have many children, but if they don't do our will,
yeah,
they're not going to be in our will.
Right.
And if they've gone astray, we're going to write them out of the will. They're not going to have that placement as a son or
right,
a daughter.
Right. But,
I mean, whenever I say son, I mean child in general.
Exactly. Exactly.
Now, The word huiothesia is used as in the context of adoption by Greeks and Romans, and it's used as in placing a son for adoption,
mm-hmm,
by Strabo. However, there's another word that describes the actual act of adoption.
Okay.
Okay? You can place a son in many different ways, and
yeah,
one of those ways is by placing him up for adoption. I mean, let's face it.
Right, right.
However, the word eispoiesis means literally to make one into.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the actual word that means adoption.
Right.
And it appears nowhere in Scripture.
Okay. Yes.
Okay? And Strabo uses, in one passage in his geography, he uses the words huiothesia and eispoiesis together. Huiothesia,
mm-hmm,
to describe the placing of the son,
right,
and eispoiesis to describing the actual act of adoption, which happened,
right,
after the son was placed for,
right,
adoption.
So,
and the scriptural context, huiothesia is used, but not in the context of adoption,
mm-hmm,
but in the context of taking one of the children of Yahweh and restoring him to his position as a son.
Exactly, exactly. So it's not an adoption, it's a restoration.
Absolutely, and Paul uses huiothesia and restoration together in some of his later epistles.
Uh-huh.
It might be Colossians or Ephesians. I mean, I'm unprepared for this, and I apologize.
No, well, I've been having technical difficulties, so it's not your fault.
Okay.
Right. Yeah, I'm glad you could join me on today, because you know, I really wasn't prepared to go on. I had pretty much written the show off because I couldn't get online. And, you know, when Gary called me and I said, okay, well, I'm going to try one more time. And it worked, you know. So, yeah, so we have these various bad translations in the King James that do not reflect accurately the language that Paul used, okay, and which gives rise to these false interpretations and doctrines of the universalists who try to say that people of all different races can now be adopted as Israelites when the Bible says absolutely no such thing.
Absolutely, but there's a lot of words that are purposely mistranslated in the King James. I mean, there are places where it says recover, and the King James says receive.
Uh-huh.
And there are places where it says restore, and the King James says something else.
Right.
And it's I don't have all the passages memorized.
Sure.
I believe in memorizing history and the context of the passages.
Right.
And not... Yeah. I know men that can cite 30,000 Bible passages, and then you ask them to tell you the story, and they don't know the story.
Right, and they have the interpretation all wrong.
Right.
Exactly. But here, let me switch, because I see we have only about 15 minutes left, and I don't want to intrude on Pastor Dan's show. He's coming on at 2 o'clock Eastern time. Let me switch to Acts chapter 1, because this is very critical to understanding a message from Alam Fadla. You don't have to worry about signing out. When I end the show, that'll be automatic, or you can just click on the X in the upper right hand corner of your screen if that's where it is. If you've got a different server, it might be elsewhere, but the X will get you off, you know, off this site. Okay, but here, Acts chapter 1, verse 1. The former treatise I have made, O Theophilus, of all that Jesus began both to do and teach, until the day in which he was taken up, after that he had, through the Holy Ghost, had given commandments unto the apostles whom he had chosen. Now, first of all, let me point out that he had given these commandments to the apostles. He chose the apostles. The apostles didn't choose him, okay? And he expected the apostles to carry out these commandments. He never told them in any way, shape, or form that the law was going to be abolished at the cross. They never had any such thought cross their minds. It's the universalists that, and the bad translations that have created this false impression. Verse 3. To whom also he showed himself alive after his passion with many infallible proofs, being seen of them 40 days and speaking of the things pertaining to the kingdom of God. To the kingdom, folks, not of personal salvation. Verse 4. And being assembled together with them, commanded them that they should not depart from Jerusalem, but wait for the promise of the Father, which saith he, ye have heard of me, for John truly baptized with water, but ye shall be baptized with the Holy Ghost not many days hence. Okay, who is Jesus talking to? Let's go to verse 6. When they therefore were come together, they asked of him, saying, Lord, wilt thou at this time restore again the kingdom to Israel? Now, these apostles were not talking about the Jews. They were talking about themselves and their own people, because the Jews were persecuting them. The Israelites here clearly are the enemies of the Edomite Jews. They don't see the Jews as being their kinsmen. They don't see the Jews as having the same religion as they do. They are a totally separate and distinct people. Isn't this how we should understand verse 6, William Fink?
Absolutely, and there are a lot of translations in Acts, and if you want, one day I'll dig them all out and put them together for you.
Okay.
Because there's a lot of things that aren't properly translated in the AV that show that the apostles saw the Jews as a distinct, separate people from themselves.
Right.
And as an adversarial people. I mean, and this is all throughout Acts. And
yes.
I'll bet it's half a dozen places in Acts where this can be picked up.
Right. And so in order to resolve the confusion created by this word Jew, which does not really belong in the scriptures at all, okay? And when I said earlier, you can properly translate or insert the word Jew when referring to the enemies of Jesus Christ, those Judeans who are the enemies of Jesus Christ, okay? And, of course, that's an editorial statement, but I can back that up, okay? Because in every single case where the enemies of Christ crop up or pop up, they turn out to be these scribes and Pharisees and or their followers. And they were always being led by these Edomites in every single case. Now, of course, the Pharisees had adopted or created this religion called Judaism, which they pretend to be is based on the law of Moses, which is not. And the New Testament goes to great lengths to explain that the scribes and Pharisees were not practicing the law of Moses at all, but practicing their own traditions, so that it is incorrect to refer to the religion of Moses, the religion of the Old Testament, as Judaism. That's another part of the big lie. Judaism did not exist before the Edomite Jews created it during the days of Herod. The religion properly referred to before that date is Mosaism or Hebrewism, or as the apostles and the people in Christ's time simply referred to it as the Way. Totally in contradistinction to what we know today as Judaism. Those two religions are diametrically opposed, and the religion of Moses properly is today called Christianity, not Judaism. Okay?
Absolutely.
So this is how the Jews, by inserting words into the scriptures and by defining words and we accepting their definitions of words, have become utterly confused by these false terms, and we should start using the correct terms, and that's why you're involved in translating the New Testament properly, and we have people who are engaged in translating the Old Testament properly. And in the Old Testament, wherever we see the word Yehudi in the Hebrew, it should only be translated as Judah. It should never be translated as Jew, because we don't want to insult our ancestors by calling them by a name which signifies the enemy of God's people. Okay? There's God's people, and there's the main enemy of God's people, who are the Edomite Canaanite Jews. And if we don't recognize that distinction, we are hopelessly confused, and we are living in Babylon, which means confusion. And so in order to correct all this confusion, we have to start using these words properly and not make the mistake of identifying the enemies of our people as if they were our people. Isn't this what the Jews are trying to do to us?
It's a great deception. It's incredible.
Yeah.
I think that that's the core of what's the prophecy that Yahweh was going to send us, Israel, a spirit of deception. That's
right.
Right,
because we love not the truth. We prefer to hear lies from the pulpit masters on television.
I have a paper on. I don't want to keep promoting my own website, but I have a paper on my website that spells it out very simply, strictly from the New Testament, and it doesn't really go into too much history or anything. It's just New Testament doctrine, and it should Christians embrace the Jews?
Right.
And the answer is a resoundingly no, of course.
Yes.
But that I would suggest that anybody that wants to know how a Christian should act towards the Jews should read that paper.
Yes, yes.
Because we're specifically told they're liars, and that's by John, and Paul tells us, and John tells us both, not even to have them in our company, in our house, in our home.
Yes, and which repeats Deuteronomy 7, which tells us we should make no covenants with Canaanites, which was explicitly violated by John Hyrcanus when he accepted these Edomite Jews as Judahites, as Judeans. He violated the law of Moses when he did that.
Right, but this is something you could even present to Judeo New Testament Judeo-Christians with.
Yes.
As if we're not supposed to keep company with Jews, but they're to be castigated. They're
That's
to be
right.
excoriated.
They're to be expelled from our company.
How could we be Judeo-Christians?
Yeah. Well, yeah, because there's no such thing as Judeo-Christianity, because the Jews won't accept Christ. because the Jews know that he's not a Jew. They just say that to fool the Judeo Christians.
Right. That's very true also.
Yeah. It's just, again, they make a mockery. The Jews make a mockery of the Mosaic Law. They make a mockery of the New Testament. And they mock Jesus by calling him a Jew, when they know very well that he isn't. They know he's not one of their people. Jesus referred to them as vipers.
Right, but they claim him as one of their people so that they could pick on him and mock him. And
exactly.
If he was alien to them, they wouldn't have as much authority to be able to do that.
Right. But they have to fool us Christians. That's the bottom line, you know. And so they make this claim knowingly that they understand there's no Jew who accepts Jesus Christ, period. Not even the Messianic Jews. They do not accept the First Advent. They simply do not accept Jesus Christ as the Messiah, period. Okay? So if Judaism rejects Jesus as the Messiah and Christianity accepts Jesus as the Messiah, how can there be a religion called Judeo-Christianity? That's just another one of the Jewish lies that our sheeple, you know, foolishly believe, because what did Jesus say? Don't believe what they say. See what they do. By their fruits shall you know them. And then also he said, any plant not planted by my Father shall be uprooted.
Well, I believe that goes all the way back to Genesis chapter 1 and which man Yahweh created and
yes,
which bipeds are creations of the fallen
yeah,
angels and their yeah, mongrel races.
Right, and also the parable of the wheat and the tares. Someone other than Yahweh planted those tares, okay? And in Matthew chapter 13 very clearly says that those tares would be gathered, bundled, and burned. And that only the true Judahites and Israelites would be harvested for the kingdom.
Well, the planting of the tares, they want to spiritualize that, but in reality, the planting of the tares and the planting of the wheat can only happen in the Garden of Eden.
Yes.
It
yes,
has
exactly,
to be traced back to there.
Oh, yeah.
And the enemy that sowed the tares is the devil.
Right.
It can only happen in the Genesis 3 account.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There's no any other explanation. It's implausible.
Right. Well, that was the first planting of the tares, and as we're discussing here in the history of Judea around the time of Christ, what happened was that the Edomites planted themselves in our midst. Okay.
Well, yeah, but it works both ways. I mean, Adamic men are as responsible for this as Adamic women.
That's right.
But every time a mixed race union occurs with an Adamite included, a tear is being planted.
Exactly.
But I mean, the process started at Genesis chapter 3.
Yes, yes, yeah. And once the Jews insinuate themselves into our society, what they typically do is they start to usurp the positions of authority, and they start to degrade our morality, degrade our women. Okay, they start by degrading the women, because it's harder to get the men to do that. But they start by degrading our women, and they create a society which is totally anti-Christ, totally anti-Christian. It has happened over and over again throughout history, and yet our people refuse to open their eyes and see it for what it really is. By their fruits shall ye know them.
There was a medieval illustrator. I love his work, but I can never remember. I think his name was Hegel,
okay,
or something like that. This illustrator used to draw pictures of gambling houses and bordellos and a lot of the seamy things in medieval life.
Right.
And the pimps.
Right.
and the bookies or the, you know, the gambling hosts or whatever the name for them is. I don't even know because I don't partake in that.
Yeah.
Of the medieval world, they were always depicted as short, hook-nosed
yes,
Jews.
Right.
And,
right.
And it's medieval art testifies for us.
Yes.
That the houses of prostitution, the houses of gambling, and everything else that leads our people astray.
Yes.
have always been controlled and founded and controlled by Jews.
Yes, and America is a perfect example of that, too, because it was from the 1890s to 1920 when the vast majority of the Jewish people emigrated from Russia, and landed where? New York City.
Yeah, well, New York City, and then they went right to Hollywood.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people, even in identity, try to disclaim and say that the Ashkenazi Jews have none of that, no Israelite heritage in them, if I have to frame it in that term.
Okay.
But, you know, when the Edomites converted the Khazars to Judaism,
right,
that opened the doors for interracial marriage between the Edomite Jews and the Khazarian people.
Right.
And that went on in large numbers immediately, and it's not that I could prove that. It's just inevitable, and it's the result. Wherever the Jews have traveled, as soon as they could intermarry with the local population, they do.
Yes.
And if you don't believe that, just open up the New York Times
right.
and look at the wedding announcements.
Yes, right.
And there aren't too many Jews marrying Jews in New York.
No. No, well, because their marriages are always designed to take power over the indigenous people. That's what they do. That's what the Rothschilds have done for centuries.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And by today, most Rothschilds probably look just like most Englishmen.
That's
you
right. They do.
The wheat and the tares.
Exactly, because they marry white women. Although there was a lot of intermarriage of cousins among the Rothschilds for about 100, maybe even 150 years.
Well, in Mein Kampf, Adolf Hitler describes how the German noblemen were letting their sons and daughters get married to the children of Jewish merchants.
Right, right. And those were, of course, arranged marriage so that the Jews would have access to our society.
Absolutely.
To get their foot in the door. That's how they do it.
Yeah.
So, okay, well, I see there's only a couple minutes left, and I don't want to intrude on Pastor Dan's show. So I thank everybody for having the patience, giving me a chance to get online and get this show going. And so next week, I haven't decided what the subject matter is, but today's theme, Jesus was not a Jew, is thoroughly verified by the Bible and by history. We always have to make a distinction between Jews and Judahites and between Israelites and Jews. Those two concepts are totally different. And so thanks for your patience. Thanks for tuning in and participating in the chat room. Thank you, Bill, for helping me get through this difficult presentation today. And I'll see you again next Friday night with another installment of Christogenos, okay? We'll be talking about the 2C line issue again, and the call letters for that show are 30258. That's next Friday night at 8 Eastern, okay? Thanks for tuning in. Yahweh bless everybody. Hello, Pastor Dan, and goodbye. Thank you.